Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
The season is officially over. The Sixers eliminated after, quite frankly, an ugly 99-90 Game 6 loss to the Miami Heat. Welcome to the new episode of Sixers Daily. I'm your host, Jazz Kang. Before we jump into things, don't forget to subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us wherever you get your fix. And of course, check us out at libertyballers.com. Joining me for this one, Mr. Jackson Frank, the final time we'll be doing this after a game, Jackson. Man, lots to discuss, not only for this game, but what it means for the offseason. I thought coming into this one, the Sixers would win. I was actually pretty confident that they would be able to send this to seven, whether they won in Miami in the decider. I mean, I don't know how it would have felt going into it, but this game really came down to the third quarter. It was neck and neck throughout the first half, even though Miami jumped out to an early 7-0 lead. The Sixers fought back. They were down 49-48 at the break. And then the second half began. Miami outscored the Sixers 19-4 through 7 minutes. Sixers had just 4 points on 2 of 14 shooting. What did you make of this, Jackson? And what do you think happened in that third quarter?
Yeah, I mean, it was really the last minute and a half of the second, too. The Sixers drew up 48-45 after a maxi three, gave a couple of buckets to, you know, go into halftime down one. But, you know, it was a multitude of things, really. You know, James Harden went quiet. That's something that's happened to him throughout his career and in some of these, you know, important games, and something that's happened even more throughout this last year and a half or so as he's adjusted to a new role. Tobias Harris was really quiet, except for one, you know, during that stretch, at least. Joel couldn't get shots to fall. You know, Hubie Brown kept harping on the fact that he wasn't getting shots near the rim and stuff like that, but that's not Embiid's game. He's not some huge, like, you know, he's not going to dunk a ton. He's not going to power through you like that. He struggled a little bit with the defense. And then they just felt like they were going through the motions offensively. They weren't really crisp. They had a couple of ugly turnovers. When there was a ball that would kind of bounce, they would be the second one to approach it. So just really, really poor execution. And they're two top guys in different ways, one for being too deferential and one for just not getting shots to fall against an excellent defense, were not who they had to be in this game. And so that's where the game went away. And what was weird is, I know this happens at times, but like they clearly, like they ramped up the effort later in the game. Like there was clearly another gear this team had, and that wasn't there when the game was, you know, shifting out of reach. So just a really frustrating one to watch, and I don't really know what to make of it. And I think that's why sports are so hard to cover, is that there's clearly something the Sixers had to give to at least provide us, you know, an ounce of hope for their fans and their team, but they didn't give it when the game was kind of slipping out of reach in that third quarter stretch, like you said.
Yeah, and again, that was the frustrating part, right, is the lack of effort. And guys like, I mean, don't get me wrong, Tyrese Maxey didn't shoot the ball well. He was 9 of 22, only made 1 of 7 three-point attempts. But you could tell he was busting his ass trying to make plays, giving everything on the court. Same thing with Shake Milton, had to play 28 minutes. Danny Green ended up getting hurt, injured his left knee early in the first, did not return. So we saw some extra Shake minutes in this one because Matisse Thybulle has just basically been MIA for the last like 6 months. I don't know what the hell happened to him, but looking at Shake Milton, he played well too, tried to bring the Sixers back. He had that nice run at the end of the third that at least made it seem like it could be a game in the fourth. But again, that the 9-point score, a lot closer than what this game was. The Sixers were down by 20 in the fourth before really garbage time, and then that's when they were able to cut down into the lead. But let's focus on, I want to go, you know, basically each thing that kind of went wrong for the Sixers in this one, and let's start off with Joel Embiid. The guy's a warrior, no doubt about it, playing through the orbital injury, playing through the torn ligament in his shooting hand on the right thumb, a terrible shooting game for him, 7 of 24, just 2 of 8 from deep, did have 20 points and 12 rebounds overall. But the Heat did a great job, Jackson, in this one. And Bam Adebayo, especially, you look at that first half, and George Sedano mentioned this, during the ESPN broadcast that Embiid went just 2 of 8 when guarded by Adebayo in the first half. But again, yeah, he was forcing some shots, but in my opinion, and I talked about this on Twitter, wasn't getting the ball in easy spots, wasn't getting the ball on the block, wasn't getting any easy seals in front of the rim where he can just kind of turn and have his way and get to the free throw line. But I think that that was a lot to do with the fact that A, the Sixers couldn't make basic entry passes, and B, it seemed like the Heat were just prepared for everything the Sixers were going to try and do. So not only looking at Joel Jackson, because I want to get your opinion on that, but also what do you think perhaps Doc Rivers and the rest of the team could have been doing in order to at least get something going in that third, where they only managed 15 points, not ideal with your season on the line?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were kind of a number of factors that contributed to Joel's tough night. And I think I tweeted it too, that, like, you know, Maxey, Shake, and Joel were kind of where they were going down swinging, right? Like, they were at least trying to make something happen, whereas Tobias and Harden, you know, weren't. And so there's only so much you can do at that point, right? Like, James Harden was brought in to, you know, make things easier for Joel, and he just did like so little in that third quarter, and even the fourth too, with the game, you know, after the first 2 minutes of the fourth, the game was over basically. There's not much you can do if you can't put Joel farther away from the perimeter if you have no one to get in the ball, if your best playmaker is going to just watch from the wing, right? So you can't get in the ball on the move if you don't have the passers to like thread the needle when he's on the move. And also, he played 44 minutes. Like, he was gassed all night. Like, and I think, you know, he kept talking about he was falling again and whatnot. And like, and yes, he was. But I think it's just that, like, part of it with Joel is what I remember reading and they've talked about on broadcast is like he's been trained not to like put force on his limbs. And I can imagine that when you're fatigued and you're playing 44 minutes like that after taking a week off, you know, like he did a week ago or so ago, you don't want to like misstep once and all of a sudden you've got a bad knee or ankle. So he was clearly gassed in the first half. It's harder to keep moving off the ball and fight for position against a defensive player of the year caliber player in Bam Adebayo, and then with help coming from Jimmy Butler and PJ Tucker, whoever else it is. Max Strus has some nice rotations. Like, I don't know what more you can do when James Harden plays like that in the second half and you don't have any other really good passers. And Tobias Harris is kind of quiet, just playing in the corners until the last 5 minutes of the game. So, obviously, like, I think Doc, there's things that Doc should do better. I don't like him playing Matisse for the first 2.5 minutes of that third quarter was clearly a big issue as well. But there's not much Joel and the coaching staff can do when the guy you brought in to make things easier and getting the ball in easier spots when he's clearly fatigued and already compromised isn't helping you in that regard. So a lot of it really just came down to Harden being far too passive in the second half, which is something that we knew was an issue when he was acquired.
Yeah, Jackson, we wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, right? Especially after that 31 point performance in game 6, we're like, okay, maybe he's getting it. They need him to not obviously make, but take big shots. And even if they're not falling, because with the defenses, and especially as good as the Heat are, the best defense in the NBA throughout the regular season, second best right now behind the Bucks in the playoffs, what they're going to do is just focus on taking away your number one weapon. Because anybody who watched the Sixers play regularly throughout the season, you saw exactly how they're built. And you look at Harden's, you know, performance in a do or die game. By the way, he's now 1-8 in his last 9 elimination games, but 11 points in the first half, 4-7 shooting, the season on the line, the final 24 minutes potentially, and he took 2 shots, both of them from the 3-point line, didn't get to the free throw, the charity stripe at all. When you look at everything that we went through, and if you recall, we did a live stream the day of the deadline when we found out about the trade, yourself, me, and Paul Hudrick, and we were sitting here just glowing, right? We're like, wow, this is huge. You know, they're going to, what does this mean? And how are they going to make a run at a championship? And then we see this from Harden, something that has plagued him really his last 6 or 7 years, where he doesn't show up when the season's on the line. And he played some good games for the Rockets that resulted in that team losing to a juggernaut in the Golden State Warriors. But now that we've seen this from him, and last year everybody gave him the benefit of the doubt when he was on the Nets because of the fact that he was dealing with that hamstring issue. And again, we don't know how severe that was at this point. But when you look at him, eligible to sign basically a 5-year extension at $260 million. If you're Daryl Morey, are you going near that at this point?
I mean, I think if that's what he demands, you have to give it to him, right? I mean, what's the contingency for the Sixers? Right? I mean, I know that Harden's had these issues, and I think obviously the Sixers' fortunes could look much different if Joel doesn't suffer one or both of the injuries that happened over the last 2 weeks, unfortunately. But what was weird was Harden was good in the first half. He had 11 points, four rebounds. I think he had five or six of his assists in the first half. He was pushing the tempo out of a few really nice passes to Tobias, and Maxey had his own bucket in transition early in the game. Like, he was good in the first half, and it was just like all of a sudden a flip switch to halftime, and he just went totally deferentially. The ball would be in his hands for half a second. He would barely do anything. So, yeah, I think you have to give it to him. Yeah, it's not ideal. I know there's been some rumors that maybe he takes less than that to give the Sixers some financial flexibility, but he's clearly not the player he was, you know, of a year and a half ago. But I think he still makes his team a lot better on the whole. Like, I mean, I don't think the Sixers win a series without Harden this year, which I know is not the goal, but I think if you keep Seth Curry and Andre Drummond, you're probably still looking at a first round out. So that's kind of how I look at it. I know it's not maybe the most ideal perspective. I don't think Harden's going to be some top five or six player like maybe his contract would indicate, you know, if he gets the max. But I still think it makes the team a lot better on the whole. He made things easier for Joel. The hope would be that he gets a full offseason to actually play basketball. I remember he's talked about he didn't play any 5-on-5 because he was just rehabbing his hamstring. But just kind of looking at this game today, it's tough, and you're not doing this, Jazz, but it's tough to be like, oh, like, we don't know what the hamstring's like. I mean, his co-star is playing through a normal fracture concussion, like just out of concussion protocol, has a bad thumb. Like you at least got to try something, right? Like, you can't – yes, Joel had to play better for the Sixers to win, but at least he tried to, like, 7-24, had some turnovers, got to the line a couple of times, like, 9 shot. Like, Shake Milton took, I think, 6 or 7 shots the second half. Harden took 2. Like, you can't do that, right? So, I don't know. I know this is always a possibility when you cover James Harden, because it happened, like, I think back to the game when Kawhi missed in, what, 17 or 18, and he was, like, 2 of 13 or something like that, only took 13 shots. And that was when he was even more prolific scorer than, you know, he's been in the last couple of years. So, it's always a possibility, and that's part of the issue with Harden, but I would still give it to him because I think he does make the team a lot better, and, you know, it does help Joel a lot, and Max, even Tobias, but clearly not the game you're looking for when, you know, your best player's compromised and things aren't going well, and you're just kind of watching from the sidelines, quote unquote.
Yeah, for me, and again, I think, you know, you mentioned, what are the Sixers' options at this point? I mean, if they don't re-sign James Harden, sure, you had Ben Simmons' contract come off the books, although he could opt in for a one-year contract on his own. I believe he has the player option for that, but you're still dealing with Tobias Harris's bloated deal at $36, $37 million. So yeah, the Sixers pretty much all hamstrung. But I think for me, like you mentioned, Jackson, there, it was just his passiveness, right? Like, what are you, why aren't you even trying here to do anything? You know what I mean? Especially as Miami started extending that lead early in the third to 7, 8, 9. Like, we just didn't see anything from him, any urgency, any extra gear. Like, he just didn't try. And I think that was the part that is so frustrating, that he had just as many makes at 4 as he did turnovers. You know what I mean? And I think that's where people might have a hard time wrapping their heads around. You're going to give this guy $260 million. And what kind of production are you going to be getting from him in year 5? Because you look at Joel, you know, considering the season that he had, and even with all the injuries that he's racked up throughout his career, he's 28 years old, still has, you know, depending, big men, as I've said before, age a lot differently than guards do. Maybe 3-4 more years of being prime Joel Embiid. So you're going to have to take advantage of this championship window. But again, this is not only on Harden. They didn't get, the Sixers got virtually nothing again from George Niang, virtually nothing again from Matisse Thybulle, virtually, I mean, you can go down the line, right? Like, they just didn't get anything. So when you look at the technical aspect, and you're great at breaking down the game itself. So Jackson, when you're looking at that, is there anything you would have liked to seen Doc and the coaching staff maybe do differently as that game started getting away from them, whether that's on the offensive or defensive end?
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, it comes back to, like, you can live, you can be frustrated with, you're a fan, a coach, a player. You can live if James Harden goes 7 of 19, right? Or even his double digits, like, you're like, yeah, I would like you to put the ball in the basket more, but, like, there's only so much you can do as surrounding players and coaches when your point guard goes 4 of 9 from the field. It takes 2 shots. Like, that, like, obviously, okay, yeah, like, I'm not even trying to compare this, but, like, it's, there is clear irony in the fact the Sixers traded away a left-handed point guard for his lack of offensive aggression, only to get one, you know, who clearly had also not, and I'm not saying that again, Sixers are better with James Harden than Ben Simmons not playing, and Harden's a better player, but there's clear irony in that the offensive regression still plagues a Sixers left-handed point guard. I don't know much you can do. Like Maxey clearly tried to make things happen, but you can't run the same sets you do for Maxey, and you can't run a lot of stuff if Harden's just not going to even like try to attack, right? Like so much of what Maxey does is playing off of Harden and using his speed and his jumper and all that. And so much of what Tobias does is similar, right? If Harden's not even willing to entertain a ball screen, those double drags that run early in the clock or those forwards actions, like where do you go as players and coaches, right? You're just so limited. So I can't. And again, it's not all on Harden. He didn't play well, but like it was very hard to counter past that once he wasn't going to be aggressive. And aggressive doesn't have to, you know, I've talked about him in previous, doesn't have to be him taking 20 shots. It just has to be him looking to get downhill, looking for him to at least be a threat to score. And then he swings it to Maxey, and Maxey can attack from the winger. He swings it to Tobias, and Tobias lets a quick catch and shoot three go from the corners. Like, it's just that sort of thing, right? And so that's the biggest issue. I'm sure if I went back and watched the game, like I would see some stuff that, we can nitpick about what Doc and company could have done better, what Maxey or Tobias could have done better. But you're just in a really, really narrowly limited spot when Harden just plays like he did tonight, and he just didn't look like I don't want to ever psychoanalyze, but like he just didn't have interest in like creating for others or creating for himself in that second half. And that's a really tough spot to be for everyone involved after that.
Jackson, just, and for those of you who might be tuning in a little bit later, we're recording this legitimately right after the final tip, and our Paul Hudrick at the Wells Fargo Center doing his job there as kind of our beat reporter and lead producer, just tweeted this out. Doc Rivers said he's not worried about his job security and said he believes he's done a terrific job. Okay. I just want to say this. I think he did a good job in handling the adversity the Sixers went through, because even without Joel, and you remember that stint that he had the COVID case and he had the injury. I mean, the team didn't win many games, but he kept them in it, right? Like, I mean, and we saw that with that Clippers team a few years ago. I believe it was the 2019 season or the playoffs, where they didn't have a lot of talent, but they just played hard and everybody was kind of giving him credit at that point. But I mean, when you look at the on-court stuff, the lack of adjustments, the lack of imagination on the offensive end, do you agree with his sentiment?
No, but I also don't expect him to say anything otherwise, right? Like, you mean
a terrific job, though? I mean, you wouldn't look at it and say, well, I mean, our team did lose in the second round, so might have to do things better. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Some of it, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Those are always, it's always a tough spot to put a coach in, right? That you don't, but I'm not going to ever like sit here and be like, oh, like Doc Rivers needs to be fired. But I do think if the Sixers want to get beyond the second round, I don't think Doc is the man for the job. Their offensive sets are not as creative as they need to be. I think there's a little more versatility that you could see guys like Maxey and Tobias play with. I think they did a decent job with James this year, getting him off the ball, running, you know, a little bit of stuff from the post and whatnot. But again, Doc's not going to be like, oh yeah, I'm fearing for my job, of course, but there are things Doc could do better. I know that they were put in a tough spot when Danny Green went down the first quarter, and Danny had a really nice first 3 minutes, hit a three, had a nice steal. But like the 12 minutes Matisse were just dreadful. I mean, they were minus 15 in those minutes, the Sixers. And it was especially dreadful in the 2.5 minutes he played in the second half. And I know that I'm a great option. Like that's the whole thing with the Sixers, right? Is they had four mostly reliable options this year. And then the fifth, until Danny kind of came alive in this last few weeks of the year, was always kind of a tenuous spot. But yeah, I think there's things Doc should certainly do better. Offensive creativity, just, you know, handling the back. I mean, it would have been, yeah, I know it didn't really matter in this game, but like, I mean, Paul Reed clearly looked like, I mean, the best option to play backup center. And even like, you want to go back to last year. Like, I know that Paul Reed's probably a much better player than it was a year ago, but like they kept giving Dwight Howard minutes in the second round, and those minutes were awful for the Sixers. Like, I have a hard time believing that Paul Reed couldn't have done more. And I know it's a different roster construction. Him actually having a point guard to feed him the ball in the role with James Harden helps a lot during his minutes, but just things like that. And so, yeah, I mean, Doc has done some good things in Philly, as we mentioned, but I don't think he is a championship caliber coach. And I think if the Sixers are very serious about winning the title, he is not the man for the job. I think there's clearly a spot for him in the NBA, as you said, Jazz, like kind of one of those, maybe a team that's a little bit shorthanded with talent and needs kind of be coached up, like you mentioned, the Clippers or the Embiid-less Sixers earlier this year. But I think clearly the Sixers with Embiid and maybe Harden in the fold moving forward, and even Maxey, they should have title aspirations, and they do. And I don't think Doc is the one to, you know, get them there.
Yeah, look, and as you mentioned, I mean, the irony in the, hey, we couldn't rely on Ben Simmons to not only make but take a shot when the season was on the line. Did not see that. You mentioned it. Also, some irony after this game, Jimmy Butler was asked during the post game just about playing against the Sixers. He mentioned how much love he has for Joel Embiid and how much he respects him. Then he said he still wishes he was with this team. So you look at that now, all these decisions that led to this playoff exit when Joel had such a great season. And again, we saw how much the injuries hampered him, especially in this series, even though he toughed it out against Toronto with the ligament, the thumb ligament injury, pardon me, but dealing with the mask and dealing with all that, and he did whatever he could. But I mean, a lot to that. And again, I know I'm not going to sit here and cry over spilt milk or because hindsight's always 20/20 when you look at it, but just taking into stock Jimmy Butler's performance, he was great in this series, dominated the Sixers. And
yeah, incredible. I mean, I know that Joel had injuries, but like, I mean, he was clearly the best player in the series. I mean, what a phenomenal playoffs overall from Jimmy still. I mean,
and the way he does it is so impressive, right, Jackson? Because he's not this like dead eye 3-point shooter, although he has been pretty damn good throughout the playoffs. But when you look at the way he plays the game, it's kind of reminiscent of what you saw at the beginning of the century in terms of he takes a lot of twos and, you know, he doesn't get to the rim for per se these easy lay-ins. He's able to hit these floaters or, you know, pull up jumpers. And you just see what he did in this second round, 27.5 points. Averaged 7.5 rebounds, even 5.5 assists, and just played so, so good. So giving him some credit, I don't want to sound like this was all because the Sixers sucked and the Heat, you know, were just this talentless team that got lucky.
Sixers largely played poorly because the Heat were awesome tonight in game six. They were awesome defensively, and at different points, they were awesome offensively. I mean, just the stuff Max Strus did in the first half. P.J. Tucker was a killer all series with the Sixers with his cuts and his helps on defense and his corner threes, his floater. I know he didn't hit any threes tonight, but his floaters, like, he just, I mean, Bam was great defensively. Like, yeah, the Sixers didn't do some things well, but the Heat just played better. And I think the play that kind of encapsulated it was, I think about 5.5 minutes to go, Jimmy misses a little runner. The Sixers kind of watch the ball bounce. Jimmy tracks it down, then hits a three. And I think they like panned to Jimmy. He's like mouthing like, wow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that was it, right? Jimmy hit a lot of shots that maybe he didn't hit throughout the regular season. And then this second half, the Heat made a lot more plays that just kind of showed a level of connectivity that the Sixers didn't have for most of that second half.
Yeah, and you look at this game in particular, the Sixers actually made 5 more three-pointers. You know what I mean? Didn't shoot as well from inside the paint, and that was the killer in this one. Miami had an advantage there, 62-48. Also, the Heat had 22 points off of Philly turnovers, and the Heat out-rebounded Philly 49-35, 213 offensive rebounds. There were so many plays that pissed me off, Jackson. Sorry, I'm just going to go off on a tangent here, but like PJ Tucker friggin' getting, you know, offensive rebounds and lay-ins. And there was like, he had 4 offensive rebounds, PJ Tucker, you know what I mean? A guy who just stands in the corner on the offensive end waiting for open threes, and Harden just couldn't even get a body on him. And it was so frustrating to watch, as I mentioned earlier, just the lack of effort compared to what the Heat were getting from their secondary guys like PJ Tucker, Max Strus, who was great in the first half, cooled off a bit in the second. But as you mentioned, he had 20 points. You had Dwayne Dedman coming in, the guy who was dead in the water in terms of his career. You know what I mean? A year ago. Now, he came out and played with effort, and it was disappointing. And I know that the Sixers guys, especially their top four in terms of Embiid, Maxi, Harden and Tobias Harris, they looked fatigued at this point. You know what I mean? Playing basically every 2 days, didn't have the advantage of getting a 3-day break like we saw happen with Milwaukee and Boston, like we saw happen with Golden State and Memphis. But I mean, those guys just looked tired, and nobody else gave the Sixers anything in this series. And in the last two games, at least, because I mean, we saw Danny Green have a pretty good outing. George Niang had a decent one when they were back at home for games 3 and 4, but not much again in this game in terms of effort outside of maybe Joel, Shake Milton and Tyrese Maxey. Let's take a break here, Jackson. I want to jump into some big picture stuff, getting into the offseason now, and talk about Daryl Morey as well. We'll do that coming up in about a minute.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
All right, we are back. Jackson, talking a little bit there before the break, just about the lack of effort and the lack of secondary production that you saw. And really, the Heat's depth advantage was so apparent throughout this series. Although, like I said, games three and four, you're like, okay, the Sixers have a chance at this, assuming Joel plays up to the level we're and he is accustomed to, and you're getting some decent offensive output from Harden. But looking at the big picture stuff now, okay, Harden also, by the way, reading this tweet, coming out that Harden said he will opt into the final year of his deal. So likely we'll be here again next season, unless he is moved somehow. Again, I don't see that happening just at his current contract. Also, side note, just saw something else on social media that he will be the second highest paid player in the league behind Steph Curry. So looking at this right now, big picture stuff, Jackson, you're Daryl Morey. What are the first things you're trying to take care of in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think on the whole, Daryl's done a very good job. The way he remade the roster over the past year and a half, that clearly made some missteps on the margins, not really doing anything at last year's deadline beyond getting, you know, George Hill recovering from a thumb surgery and a long layoff. And then this year, not being able to supplement any sort of rotation player outside of the Harden deal really hurt them, I think, as we saw, you know, with Matisse being a non-factor and Danny being in and out of lineup at times, and obviously, you know, missing, you know, most of game six, unfortunately. But, You got to find a little more range and athleticism on the wings. I think you're good at backups. Like, honestly, like, I think maybe you sign a guy if you want, but like, I think between both Bassey and Reed, you're going to find someone you can play for, you know, 14 minutes a night, sometimes fill in for big minutes when Joel's resting or, you know, fingers crossed has an injury or something like that, or fingers crossed doesn't have an injury. I'm not hoping for an injury with Joel, of course. but then I think one more guard, like, I think Shake, you know, we've seen what Shake can do, and credit to Shake is that he will go and look for his shot. Right? That's not always an easy thing to do, right? Like, and so that's important. But I think another guard off the bench would be nice for them to have. Maybe one more shooter. I don't want to be like too caught up in the moment, but like, I think like barring you together, there's nothing available. Like, I would move Matisse, but I think he has given you nothing for basically three playoff runs now. And I don't know what he makes basically all of your best players' jobs harder. And I don't think the defense has been good enough in this kind of lead stopper. Like, we always talk about like a primary ball handler, I think, you know, or secondary ball handler, something like that. Matisse went from being the secondary point of attack guy to the primary point of attack guy, and his defense clearly suffered, you know, without Ben Simmons around. So I don't know what significant purpose he served to advance the Sixers title hopes. So I would try and move him. I think Isaiah Joe deserves a shot. I don't know if he's going to get one, but like, I think that's something you want to explore a little bit. But a little more range on the insides on the wings, like I said, backup guard would be the two areas to explore. I would still be looking to kind of see what Tobias's market is like. I know he didn't play well the last four games, but overall, I think this was a pretty positive playoff experience for him, and the way he kind of evolved his game to around Harden and Embiid post-trade deadline was very impressive and worth commending. So those are kind of things I would do. I think overall, Daryl's in quite well in his year and a half with the Sixers, but clearly some missteps. And generally, it goes to kind of show you how small the margin of error is to rebuild a championship roster after all of the mistakes that the Colangelo era, the Brett Brown era, the Elton Brand era, kind of all those different things, right? So when you're not nailing things and being perfect, as Daryl hasn't been, you have second round exits. And so it's a tough spot to be in. You know, as we said, one of those missteps is not getting Jimmy Butler. So, there's a big difference between having Jimmy, James Harden, and Joel versus James Harden, Tobias Harris, and Joel. And clearly, you know, that's been felt the last couple of years. So just to kind of summarize, see what the market's like for Tobias and Matisse, upgrade it, get another backup guard, get another wing, you know, off the bench. And I think kind of see what you have in some of your young guys, whether it's a Jaden Springer, Isaiah Joe, Paul Reed, Charles Bassey, and encourage whoever it is as coach, to play those guys more and kind of experiment during the regular season, because I think it's okay to kind of treat the regular season as more of an experimentation than maybe the Sixers have the last 2 years.
Yeah. And they've been seem like they've been going balls out to try and, you know, obviously win a ton of games, which is not a bad thing in the regular season, but figuring out how to make adjustments, I think has been an issue. And you look at this, I mean, James Harden also said that why he only took two shots. Again, this is coming post game from the quotes. He said that we were running our offense. The ball didn't get back to me. Okay. I agree with him on that. Mind you, he does have the ball in his hands literally for the first 10 seconds of the possession, right? Because the Sixers seemed like they couldn't get anything going until there was 14 left on the shot clock. And you look at this, just the lack of imagination. And now how are they going to be able to rectify this? And again, Daryl Morey maybe had his hand forced into giving up Seth Curry. I think Seth Curry would have made a big difference for this team. Maybe not have, you know, taken him to the second round, but he's capable of scoring 25 points on any given night and certainly would give you around the 15-16 range just because he's such a good shooter. Obviously adding shooting has to be at the top of the list as well. But when you look at offensively, like what would you like to see Philly try and run next season, assuming we have Embiid, Harden, and Maxey back, which obviously looks like that is going to be the case. But with those three guys there, how do they make it so they're not so reliant on getting Joel the ball on the block or when he's ceiling right in front of the rim, or you know what I mean, off a back cut that he's being able to, like a big to small screen on the block where he's able to cut across it and catch the ball in the post. Like what else would you want to see from the imagination, whether it's Doc Rivers or a new head coach for next season?
Yeah, well, I think one thing you did see sometimes throughout this postseason, even maybe toward the end of the regular season, is you saw Joel be used as a spacer. So whether it's on the wings, the corners, and just kind of go five out, that's something I would try and tap into more at times. I think you want to see more two-man connections among the three of Tyrese, Tobias, and James. My goodness, so many names, lots to think about. Things like that, I think you want to see more of. So obviously, you'd expect Maxey to be even better than he was a year ago. Just look at the growth in a bunch of areas of Maxey from September through May, and just imagine what he's going to be like next time in December of next year. I think you're looking at a guy who could definitely be a fringe all-star, honestly. I think, you know, so those sorts of things you want. So just like more shot creation from Tyrese would be someone you can kind of bank on a little bit, I think. I think it's not unreasonable to think that Harden could be a more reliable shot creator, you know, a full year and a half removed from that hamstring injury. So things like that. But yeah, just kind of get your three other best offensive options a little more in tandem with each other. It just felt like a lot of the stuff they ran maybe beyond the kind of the Tyrese and James screening for each other stuff was just one guy do something, then play off of it, kind of bring them together, make stuff happen together. So there's just some ideas right there. I'd have to think about a little more in depth, watch some, you know, film of who, if Doc's still around, maybe watch some old film or, you know, watch some stuff like that. But that's kind of where I go. I think there's definitely kind of a higher ceiling for this offense to be. I think definitely underwhelmed. Some of that was inconsistencies from the players, but I think a lot of it too was schematic, just kind of limitations.
Yeah, and they're severely hampered by the lack of talent too. And I think, you know what I mean, just the secondary talent. Again, you have Joel Embiid, you have Tyrese Maxey, you have James Harden kind of taken on the big three role. Tobias Harris, overpaid, but it's still a very good NBA player. So you have the nucleus there to get things done. Haven't been to a conference finals since obviously that magical 2001 season with Allen Iverson. SB Nation, the company I work for, did send out a bit of a backhanded compliment to the Sixers, I do have to say, saying that the Kings have made it to more conference finals than the Sixers since then. And the Kings obviously haven't made the playoffs since back in 2006. But looking at the big picture stuff, Jackson, like, frustrating to be a Sixers fan, frustrating to have to go through this now, eliminated in the second round four of the past 5 years, although safe to say that bubble was a joke without Ben Simmons and everything that happened there. The Raptors lost in 2019 with the Kawhi shot, losing to a less talented Hawks team last season, and then now coming up short again when the expectations were so high. So when you look at this, like, what's the frustration? Like, you've covered the team for so long now. What has the frustration been like for you when you watch this team play? And when you look at, again, just the perils of being a Sixers fan, is just as part of the course for what we've seen throughout the last 20 years, basically?
Yeah, I mean, I think as someone who's covered him for so long now, you just kind of get numb to it. Like, I mean, I know I've only covered him for, I guess I covered him since Ben's rookie year. But like at this point, like if they make it beyond the second round, it's like, wow, that's cool. Like I get to cover the third round of the playoffs, you know, and I obviously cover the league as a whole. So it's not like new to me, but covering a specific team it would be. But yeah, I mean, it's just they made a lot of missteps post-Hinkie, and it's hard to account for all those, and I'm not saying that like everyone else is free of faults and whatnot, but when you kind of I guess what's the way how to when you poorly manage assets and players and flexibility like they did for 3 or 4 years, when you have very young talented stars and whatnot, It's hard to win a title regardless. It's much harder when you squander those kind of pathways to kind of increase your chances of winning a title or being a finals contender. So is what it is at this point. I thought they would lose to the Heat. I didn't think it would come like this. I thought you'd see a little more competitiveness the last couple of games. And there were some things the Sixers did wrong. The Heat did deserve a lot of credit. But generally speaking, this is kind of how I just expect Sixers season to end at this point. You're going to have to win a series when you got Joel and you're not kind of completely hampered by injury like they were in the bubble. But beyond that, it's hard, and they haven't kind of found the necessary steps to progress beyond winning a first round series.
Yeah, it's been hectic, and it's been, you know, disappointing all around. But again, they do have a path to becoming a legitimate NBA championship contender if they can make some, you know, good moves this offseason. Again, that Tobias Harris contract that I mentioned earlier, severely hampering them being able to do anything. Could look at a team like OKC, could look at a team that has the ample cap space that you might be willing to give up some future assets in order to offload that contract. So again, there's so much work to be done. Unfortunately, the on-court portion of it is now over. I want to thank everyone for joining us throughout the season. This is my first year on the job covering the team and working as a producer for our podcast network. So thanks to everyone who's stuck with us and new listeners as well. Also, Jackson, I want to say thank you to you, man. You kind of came on with us at the beginning of this season and did a great job. And you know, we'll do this and not as often. So the good news is most of your evenings will probably be free now, so I won't have to bother you to hop on the podcast. But just want to say thanks for all your work, not only in the podcast network, but on the written side of things as well.
Yeah, glad we could do this most of the year. And apologies for anyone who is listening to this. I am working through a bit of a sore throat, so hence some of my coughing and my and whatnot. But yeah, always happy to talk with you, Jazz. I'm sure we'll do it in the off season, but not as frequently. And hey, we're only 2 months away from Summer League. Maybe we'll be able to break down some Jaden Springer and Isaiah Joe and Charles Bassey tape in a couple of months. That should be fun, but always happy to talk with you, Jazz.
Oh, thanks, Jackson. That should be a lot more joyful than watching this team have to struggle through what we have throughout the playoffs on certain nights. So that'll do it for this episode of Sixers Daily. It'll be your final post-game edition of the 2021-2022 season. We're still going to have lots on the go for you. Sean will be back with the Talking About podcast on Friday. I'm sure he'll do a deep dive into what the Sixers need to do this offseason and summarize everything that went wrong really during this playoff run. And we'll have you covered basically all the way through. Still be doing some general NBA talk, and we'll keep you covered with some player reviews. Also, obviously previewing the NBA draft, although the Sixers don't have a first round pick at this point, but we'll get into that, and also be doing lots of free agency work as well. So as I mentioned off the top, as I always do, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers podcast network. We always appreciate a 5-star review, and we'll catch up with you again. Won't be a post-game edition, but we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.